Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
The Batteries Included podcast is brought to you with United Chargers. United Chargers presents the Grizzly range of EV chargers. There's the original Grizzly Classic, a powerful, heavy-duty, portable EV charging station built to withstand the toughest conditions. The Grizzly Duo, a dual-port unit designed to charge two vehicles at the same time. The Grizzly Mini, a small, portable charging station built with an indoor-outdoor-rated cast aluminium enclosure. And the Grizzly Smart, a revolutionary smart EV charger. All Grizzly chargers come with a convenient 24-foot cable and the ability to adjust the current from 16 amps all the way up to 40 amps. That's 9.6 kilowatts. Plus, they're IP67 rated. Built in Canada with the highest quality materials, order yours now at unitedchargers.com. That's unitedchargers.com.
Hello, and welcome to the Batteries Included podcast. It's February the 2nd, 2024. And this is episode number 22. Thank you very much for joining us. On today's show, we'll be talking about charging the refreshed Porsche Taycan, General Motors' decision to bring back plug-in hybrids, and Ford confirms NACS adapter is coming free to owners this spring. And of course, much, much more. I'm Dominic Ioni. Joining us today is the ebullient Mr. Tom Malogny, senior editor at Inside EVs and host of the YouTube channel State of Charge. We also have the measured Mr. Martin Lee from the EV News Daily podcast, which is available on all the best podcast platforms. And of course, Kyle Connor joins us from the majestic, practically palatial halls of AutoSpec Studios, where he produces high voltage videos for a number of YouTube channels. Hi there, everybody.
Morning.
Good to see you all.
Good morning.
So I guess let's take a look at what's been happening this week and kick the show off with the EV News Daily weekly reporting roundup. Take it away, Martin.
Well, the Ford CEO, Jim Farley, announced that the Ford EV Tesla adapter will be sent free of charge to owners of the F-150 Lightning and Mustang Mach-E, which will enable those models with the CCS plugs to use Tesla's North American charging standard chargers. Eligibility for the adapter will be determined by VIN, and each customer will receive one adapter. Customers get their adapter via a reservation process. Ford will cover the cost of shipping. Details on how to reserve them and the tech specs not yet shared. But the activation, the charging, and the payment process we do know will be done seamlessly, they say, through Ford Pass or in-vehicle. Smart introduced a new pro spec of their electric crossover here in the UK, the Smart Number 1, which means the entry price is down by $5,000. Starts at $31,950 for almost 200 miles of range. Much like the BZ4X, the Subaru Solterra has got its 2024 model year improvements. They're gradually improving the charging time, 80% now, 35 minutes compared to an hour previously, and much better battery conditioning, which means you can charge it in the cold. Well, the median range for EVs in 2023 is now 270 miles. That is a 13-mile increase on the previous year. Tesla plans to release a new Model 3 performance configuration. No surprise, because it's currently not on sale. It was removed from the lineup, at least in the US, earlier this year. Everyone else that got the Highland, so-called Highland version, had the performance deleted at the same time. Tesla's Martin Viecha commenting online that the new configuration is coming, but didn't give us a date. Apple's VP of Hardware Engineering left to join Rivian. He was a key member of the Apple team, having been there for 25 years. BYD announced the European launch of their five-seater SUV, the Seal U. It's launching in February, based on their e-platform 3, LFP cells, 800-volt architecture. Kia plans to launch their EVs now in sequential order, which is good for simpletons like me. It'll now be EV3, EV4, EV5. They were going to bring the 4 first, however. The next three numbers will cover price points from $35,000 to $50,000 US dollars. Japanese officials conducted a raid on a Toyota affiliated plant after the company admitted to cheating on engine testing. Akio Toyoda, the chair, apologized for the scandal and vowed to steer the company out of it. CEO Koji Sato apologizing for the combustion testing scandal now engulfing the company, whilst data this week revealed they fell further behind the rest of the industry, with electrified sales just 0.92% of their business. General Motors plans to add plug-in hybrids to their North American lineup, according to the CEO Mary Barra during the automaker's earnings call, which was a good earnings call. The company are doing very well. She said that deploying a plug-in hybrid technology will deliver environmental benefits over EVs while the US builds out its charging network. You used to have plug-in hybrids, didn't you? GM. Good. No details released, by the way, on when we get them, what they'll be, any kind of specs, or whether that work has even begun. That's a long development cycle that can take many years to bring new vehicles to market. Have they got something they can just plug and play? I don't think so. Right, in December last year, plug-in sales in France reached a new record of 54,000 and a half units, mostly thanks to battery electric vehicles. BEVs were 70% of the plug-in vehicle share in December, where it's now 30% of all new passenger cars sold. Things are flying in France. Tesla upgrading the Model Y in China with hardware 4.0, with a self-driving computer capable of seeing greater distances and five times the computing power. And Daimler Trucks of North America, Navistar and Volvo Group of North America formed a coalition called Powering America's Commercial Transportation to accelerate the construction of a national charging infrastructure network for medium and heavy duty trucks. Very important work they're doing there. That is your update for what's happened this week. Dom, it's back to you.
All right. How's that? Hey, Tom, can you hear me okay now?
I can hear you. Sound a little bit better now. You were a little low before, Dom.
Oh, okay. It was set for, it's set to do it automatically, but I've changed it manually. But anyway, speaking of Tom and, I don't know, something, I believe you have a little bit of a giveaway set up to talk about this morning.
Sure, yeah. So a couple of weeks ago, I mentioned that we were going to be giving away a Emporia charger. And I asked the followers to email me and tell me why this is something that you need, and also show proof that you subscribe to Batteries Included here. So I got over 200 emails, and I read through all of them with the help of my wife, and I took it down to 10 finalists. 10 names are on these pieces of paper here. What I'm going to do is pick one of them, and then I will email you and we'll set up an arrangement for delivery. Now, this is for an Emporia 48-amp charger, and I said you can have the option of getting it with J1772 or the NACS connector. Either one, that's your choice. So let's check it out right now.
We need some music, some draw music.
Didn't think about that, did we?
we'll set it up.
Okay, and the winner is Thomas Durkowski.
Ooh, congratulations.
So Tom, I will I love it. So Tom, I will send you an email and we'll set up delivery. You got to tell me which one you want. I don't know if you're in the chat room here today. I don't see your name, but you could have a different screen name. And we'll get you out your Emporia charger as soon as possible. We're going to be doing these frequently here. My goal is to maybe do this once a month. So that's the January giveaway. The February giveaway is going to be a Grizzly charger, our channel sponsor here. So I'll let you guys know when you should start sending me emails. Don't do it yet because I want to try to have only 2 weeks of emails to go through and not like a month like I did last time. And, there's an honor system here. Be honest. Tell me what your situation is and why you would like to get one. You know, I had such a wide spectrum of people telling me what their situation was. But quite honestly, and I appreciate all the followers, but like one follower has a Lucid Air and he got finally took delivery of his GM Hummer EV. So it's like, it's hard for me to give somebody a free charger when they've got $220,000 worth of EVs in their garage. And they're like, yeah, I need a second one for the Hummer EV. And, I love everybody, but I really tried to pick people that need it. Like I got emails from, I'm a disabled vet. I saved my money. I finally bought a used 2017 Chevy Bolt EV. I've been charging on 120 for the last, 6 months. So, those are the people that I'm really looking to help out with this. And as I said, I appreciate everybody, but be honest when you send me your emails. Don't make up a story. This is kind of like an honor system thing here, but I'll be getting that charger out to Tom. I'll send you an email. Let me know which one you want. And then we'll start one for next week. Next month, we'll do a Grizzly and we'll try to keep it rolling all year long with a charger a month.
All right. Looks like we lost Martin there. He's, I think his connection gave up the ghost for a moment, but he'll be back. Let's see. So the Porsche Taycan is getting a refresh, and Kyle here has driven the car and charged it up, and I believe maybe even plotted the curve. I'm not sure. We'll find out, I guess. So Kyle, I've got the feeling you're pretty excited about this refresh. The Taycan is already one of the best EVs out there. So what has Porsche done to improve this car?
Well, I can't tell you. You anything about it. I can only tell you range and charging. And I can't tell you all the details for another week. So okay. A little bit less than a week, only 5 days or so. From
now. So next Friday we'll
have the details. But I can tell you about the charging because The charging's crazy. I can tell you that it's crazy. It's the most insane thing I've ever charged. Truly the most insane thing I've ever charged. So you
more insane than Hummer EV?
Well, on a battery level, absolutely. For the amount of range that you get, yeah. And the curve is amazing. I've never seen a curve like this. I can't tell you exact battery capacity, but I can guess based off of all my numbers yesterday, it's in the high 90 kilowatt hour usable range. It's very weird restrictions on what I can and can't say, but I can tell you I did a range test in it yesterday and it was pouring rain, absolute garbage conditions, which is why my video was supposed to go up today along with everyone else's. But we had like we were just a boat driving through water all day. It was crazy. So I have the keys right here to a prototype big battery rear wheel drive Taycan, and I'm going to go try and get 400 miles out of it today.
That's a lot of miles.
Goal. It's not going to be a standardized 70 mile an hour range test. We're going to have three people in the car, but we're going to go for, let's just see if we just drive it gently, not, 40 miles an hour holding up traffic, but just drive it gently. Can we get, chasing 400 in the Taycan? And all the Porsche engineers were running simulations last night. Like, is this possible on the route? And yes, it's going to be close. But we're talking a lot more range from the previous car. I think we can be pretty clear. A lot more than the previous car. And then the charging performance it's just crazy. Really the most insane thing I've ever experienced. It will peak at 335-ish kilowatts delivered to the car. That's the peak. It goes about 320, a little bit more than that, into the battery. And then, of course, AC loads kick on and it compensates from the charger for those. But peak doesn't matter. And Tom knows this and you guys know this. It's all about the curve. And it dips. You come under 300 kilowatts. So from zero to when you come under 300 kilowatts is at 65%. So it's just, it just rockets. And I added over 74 kilowatt hours in 15 minutes to the car.
Ooh.
It's going to be the new king of 10% challenge. It's going to be the new king of cannonball. It's the craziest charging I've ever experienced. So you there's no reason, you know, old Taycan from 3 to 47% would give you full send, 270 kilowatts, and it would ramp up because it was current limited. Now we have a little bit higher voltage. We have a 400 amp request from the charger now, and it just sits flat out from 0 to 65.
Nice.
So get ready for craziness. I have the curve filmed. I have it. Ryan's going to go put it on the website this morning. I literally did everything last night. So I was the last group who got to go and come and test these cars. So, you know, you'll see some of the other outlets have some range stuff, but none of it is standardized range testing as far as I can tell. None of it's representative. It's just someone drove a car in some way. I don't really like these types of range things. You know, Porsche, of course, were, you know, I think they respect a lot of the out of spec coverage. They're trying to get us a car to Colorado as soon as possible on the aeros to do the real test that we can compare against other cars. So, yeah, this was the most insane. Yeah, it's just, it's so next level. The charger.
Right.
What charger did you put it on last night?
We used just an Electrify America BTC unit, cool. A new one.
Yep.
You know, it was one of the paired units. We blocked the other pair so we could get a good curve. And, you know, I went 0 to 100 and had a little bit of thermal limit. So instead of 65%, I tapered at 62%. Under 300 kilowatts, but today I'm going to charge it again and fill in the rest of that curve so I can get a pretty good indication. I mean, this is just, I've never charged. I've seen cars that, like, Lucid has peaks at 351 kilowatts. I've seen Hummer EV 377. I've seen now, like, they really get up there, but this, I've never seen anything just sit for over 12 minutes over 300 kilowatts.
Did you charge the Macan when you had it?
Yes.
And are you allowed to talk about
it? Yeah.
I never know what we're allowed to talk about.
I don't remember if I did. I have charged it, but it's not like this, that's for sure. It's a pretty good curve. It's 270 kilowatts peak, and it holds
right, and this
it
the,
deep.
Yeah.
Right. Wow. 270 was what the Taycan does now, right? The peak.
So that's what the Taycan does now. And the small, you'll see all the technical details later this week.
Right.
But right.
So
we can be sure that this is going to be just a whole another league, not even in the same category.
So what do you think if people are driving like on a regular road trip and you're doing like a, you know, 2% to 80%, you know, on the regular, how long do you think a stop at a, you know, on a road trip is going to be like?
Okay, so let me pull up
the data. So when I did my road trip in my Tesla Model 3, long-range rear-wheel drive, 2018, my average turned out to be like 19 minutes over like 3,000-some miles. And that was a bit longer than it actually would be because a few of those sessions were...
you charge really deep.
Yeah.
Yeah, most some people aren't going to plug in charge, like you. I think like the 10 to 80 is really more important. Very few people are going to go down to 2%.
Right. Right.
Keep in mind, we can assume a much bigger battery than before. So 10 to 80 is adding a lot more energy than the previous car.
Right.
And so 10 to 80 is about 16 minutes. So I forget it's not the official quoted stated time, but that's what I've observed is in that region. It was better than what Porsche will quote.
Yeah.
Because right. I saw an 8 to 77 I have, or 8 to 79 in 16 minutes. So maybe even better than I quoted.
Yeah. Wow.
That's nuts. That's just, and the funny thing is, you know, when Kyle's talking about this, before he even said cannonball, I'm thinking cannonball, but Kyle has told me that's it. I'm done with cannonballs. I'm not doing cannonballs anymore. And that's what he said. I don't believe him for as far as I can throw him.
No,
this car, he's going to be drooling over getting this car coast to coast.
Three or four months from now.
That's just my prediction. We'll see
a real fight between Lucid and this, because Lucid, what would be cool is if I could have a Lucid today to run alongside this Taycan, because
I'm
sure the Lucid is more efficient. They are magically efficient, but I'm also really sure that the Taycan can onboard so much more energy. This is great that cars are getting to this point, but we're getting into the, you know, minimum road trip time with this based off the range that I observed yesterday in the worst of conditions beating the previous car. And, today having looking like fairly good conditions behind me. I'm hoping for 400 miles with three people in the car.
Great. Crazy.
Wow. But not at 70 miles now. So what do you have? Can you have a guesstimate of what you think it'll do in, under normal conditions on your regular 70 mile an hour test route?
Yeah. My guess in Colorado, if we have a reasonably fresh car, is it's not going to be Lucid territory. We're talking maybe mid 300s.
Okay, so, that'd be great.
The previous Taycan long range rear wheel drive, both Tom and I tested, and we got roughly 300 miles out of that car at 70. I think this is a 350, 360 car at 70.
Big upgrade. Adding 50 miles at highway speeds and just charging faster. If it comes in anywhere 340 to 360, anywhere in there, adding 40 or 50 miles and shaving 10 minutes off of a charging speed, you know, to go further, that's ridiculous. That's just that's awesome. Good on Porsche. More companies should be improving their cars like this.
I spent the last 2 days with the entire engineering team for Taycan talking about all the little, I'm full of information, which is great. So I know all the answers to all my questions. And that's the most invaluable thing about, being able to have access to these folks. You know, it was something I only found out about last minute. I was up in doing Honda Prologue, and then I'm like, oh, Taycan range test. Go, let me pop down there. And that's what we did. It was great. Yeah. And I can't talk about the chemistry changes. EVKX, I know, wants to know, but just wait a few days and I can tell you everything you want to know.
Okay. There's chemistry changes, though, you say.
I'm not confirming chemistry changes. No,
but there has to be significant improvements in how to fundamentally put this thing together.
You would think so.
Which I find it interesting because we have the new platform with Macan and Q6 e-tron, which I thought was going to steal all of the headlines. And then we come on air today and we hear about this incredible Taycan, which is an improvement on a product that's already out there. And by the sounds of it, a massive improvement, or at least a labor of love for those engineers that have got to do this. Amazing.
So about a month or so ago, Porsche set a new record on Nürburgring with the Taycan. This is not that car, right, though? Should we expect that kind of like crazy performance of the Taycan refresh? Or can we talk about anything about that?
Not till 5 more days.
Okay.
Nothing on the crazy spicy one that you and I want to know about. That's not part of my program, at least.
So how did you, so is everyone, other outlets down there doing range tests? Like what's it? Obviously there's stuff you can and can't talk about.
Yeah, it's so funny. I think they had maybe it's a global thing they have here. So they had some German guys here. They had the Norwegian guys here. They had some American. You know, Edmunds posted their stuff. I think they had a Car and Driver, a Motor Trend, all the big, normal ones. And everyone's got their own version of how to test range. And I actually was with Patrick George, who runs Inside EVs, yesterday. We had a great time. But everyone has a different calculation of what is range and what does it mean. And at least between Tom and I, we have a very strict understanding of how we conduct range tests so that it is comparable. I've seen a lot of people be like, oh, I did this in the Taycan. I remember, a few years ago I did that in an EQS. And I'm like, you can't, this isn't how this works. Even comparing on our testing on different temperature days and different elevations drives me insane.
And wind.
Well, wind is such a huge factor. Yeah, such a huge factor.
We go in loops to try to offset that. But if one day there's 16 mile an hour winds with one car and the next day you go out and it's 3 mile an hour winds, even with the loops, we fully explain that every time we do these. Right. So I think we do the best. Honestly, it's not just saying because it's me and you. I think we do the best, most controlled range tests of anybody out there. So,
yeah, we'll absolutely. I think so. Way. No question. I totally agree because we're not trying to show a customer use case. We're trying to show comparability. And that's the goal, that we're trying to achieve here.
So I think nobody just drives 70 miles an hour, nobody gets on a highway and just drives 70 miles an hour because normally if you tried to drive 70 miles, you would slow up and speed up as traffic. But Kyle and I like dodge cars and everything so that we can maintain that 70 miles an hour, and like it's like it's work sometimes. Maybe more than Kyle. Kyle, you get some of your roads I see when you're when you live stream, you're just blasting along. Like yeah. I'm here in New Jersey. I'm like weaving cars and everything to stay at 70 miles right. an hour.
Yeah, no, I do them in the middle of nowhere because we're able to, which is great.
Yeah.
But right. but no question, this is a no matter, I think we can say comfortably, the new Taycan with the big battery. No matter the conditions, it's a 300 mile car. Middle nice. Of winter, driving right. over the Rockies.
Can't say that about a lot of cars.
Right. Yeah. No, yeah, it's true. It's like, and that's...
But I would say the Lucid, as an example, a Lucid Grand Touring, I would always say was a 400 mile car. That had it did better than 400 in our 70 mile per hour test. But kind of no matter how I drove that car, as long as I was reasonable, I wasn't shredding canyons, that's a 400 mile car. This is a 300 mile car. But no question, the charging that I observed here is far superior to the Lucid. So then it becomes... You know, I'm not sure if people are really cross-shopping Taycan and Lucid, but this is the fun stuff we get to play around with.
So John Check has a question. When you range test, do you stop for snacks and bathroom breaks?
No, me, no. I don't stop.
I try not to. I might have to stop for the bathroom break once in a while. I haven't recently. I did when I first started doing these. But one thing, I drive on the New Jersey Turnpike. The rest stops are right on the turnpike. I literally coast off the highway a quarter mile, shut the car off, and then turn it on and get back on the parkway. So it might make a quarter of a mile difference at the end of the range test. So, but very rarely, only with the really long cars. Like when I did the Lucid Air, I had to. I was driving for 8 hours. that was nuts. But
you're not Superman?
What's that? Yeah.
So you're not Superman? No.
No, and I ain't getting any younger, so the bathroom breaks seem to be happening more frequently these recent years.
Oh, all right.
Let's just move on. But let's wait for another week too. But the big story for me today, at least, is the charging performance more than the range. The range that I experienced was in the absolute worst conditions. Other outlets had better conditions. I heard of some people on the loop getting mid 360 mile. Ranges cruising at highway mm-hmm. speeds, at least going from LA to San Diego and back. So yeah,
it'll be nice to see more cars get up in that range thing. I mean, people say we don't need that kind of range, but kind of do. For a lot of people, do need that kind of range. You know, just so they can just go and fill up the car like once a week, like a normal like a gas car.
That would suck if you have to drive an EV that way, though.
I mean, well, that's just Yeah, just the way if some people really like driving EVs and they don't have a driveway, that's kind of what they're stuck with, right?
Yeah, but then it's such a pain. Every week you have to fight. Like around here in LA, you can't find open chargers.
You don't buy a Taycan if you don't have a garage.
Yeah, don't buy one of these if you don't have a garage.
I mean,
don't buy any that kind of a money.
Most Taycan owners probably have a garage anyway, or just a driveway, you'd think.
With most three other cars.
Or a condo parking lot with a receptacle or whatever. So you mentioned you also drove the Prologue. Can you say anything about that yet?
Yeah, I can tell you everything about how it does not drive because I can't tell you that, but I can tell you everything else.
real quick, I mean, we can save a lot of it for later because we got lots of other things to talk about, but curious. This is the Honda Prologue is based on the Ultium system from GM, and GM is having all kinds of issues with their Ultium platform architecture in other vehicles, like the Blazer is out of stop sale. Some Lyriq owners, you know, complain about this and that, some having issues. So what's the Prologue? Is any of that coming over to the Prologue, or is it all seem to be, I don't know how much, you can't tell, or can you say how much the software engineers at Honda have had their fingers in the Ultium sauce?
Yeah, well, I spent a lot of time in my video review talking about this exact conundrum. And it's really concerning to me that a brand has partnered with a company that seemingly can't get electric cars out for themselves. And Honda is so confident in the fact that they can get every single one they need from GM. They say 40,000 in the first year, something like that. So it's literally a Blazer with a Honda badge. I mean, it has OnStar.
It's got really?
Yeah, it's literally a Blazer. Yeah, it was really.
Is it called OnStar?
Yeah.
Okay. For some reason, I was thinking. I thought Honda like took those kind of systems and kind of put their own marketing labels on them.
No, They just kept it all GM. And I think I can say this because it's not a driving impression. When you turn traction control off, it says Stabilitrack off.
Okay.
Which is GM nomenclature.
So lots of GM software.
They've added CarPlay, so they've done some tweaking somewhere. But not much.
Yeah, well, I think the base system allows CarPlay and Android Auto.
Okay. So the GM decision,
can do it too.
That was a decision to turn it off and to disable access, even though it has it. Okay, I didn't know that. That's cool.
Yeah. Because both this and the Acura ZDX have CarPlay and Android Auto.
And
okay.
But I've learned quite. I really don't know if it's worth spending any time on this car, because I'm not so sure it's interesting.
Yeah, no, we can move on, because we'll talk about this when the embargo drops. And
it's
in
a month. It's in forever, and I want to just forget about it, but I can't.
that bodes well. All right.
It's not. I'm not saying it's a bad car. I actually think it looks great. The materials are very nice. I prefer it just on a styling. You know, non-driving impressions, because I haven't driven the Blazer, but I prefer it to the Blazer. So that this would be my preference if I had to choose. Yeah.
Right. And so David Lutz is asking us, I'm curious to hear if Francie was able to make it across the country in VinFast. And I am too curious, because I didn't even know where that road trip was headed. You know, I knew that she was with Jordan, headed somewhere.
This is what happens when you get off of Twitter. You miss out all the info. Right?
I know. We need to get you all on Threads.
No. Just use X.
All right. So to bring our audience up to speed, Out of Spec has leased a VinFast VF8, and Francie is, I guess, the prime driver of that vehicle now, and she's taking delivery. How did that go? So you've leased it. Was that difficult to arrange?
Yes. It sucked.
So can you give us a little?
Yeah, I mean, we did a whole video on it. It's basically we went to the only non-corporate owned VinFast dealer in the country is in Raleigh, North Carolina, where I used to live, and so it was great to go back home and see everyone and hang out in North Carolina. But I was there way longer than I expected because I had emailed and called them ahead of time, said, hey, we're coming, reserve us a red one because I wanted it for the thumbnail, or I really wanted an orange one. They sold that. And I said, they got a couple red ones. Save one of those for us. We're on our way. And so I thought, okay, I called up Francie. She needs an electric car. I don't want to drive a VinFast, that's for sure. So anyway, but I want to cover the car. So I said, okay, I'll get you a free VinFast, basically. You know, thanks for working for us. Here's a, don't sell your Subaru, but here's a free VinFast. So we decided to either just meet in Raleigh and drive it back. But then I thought, oh, well, she, is in Memphis. So I thought, let's go to Memphis. We'll grab a Model Y. This is her parents' Model Y. We'll drive it out to Raleigh, which was a disaster because we got a flat tire and all that stuff in itself. And then we get to Raleigh in the Model Y, where we were planning on just road tripping them back the same day. And the dealer's like, oh, we sold all the cars. And I'm like, we just came all the way here. We had it arranged. What are you talking about? This is crazy. Then it turns out they were just lying to us. They didn't sell all of the cars. They had a software update bug that was stopping them from being on sale. And so there was a stop sale. They weren't delivering anymore. And I'm like, okay, you could have just told us that and we wouldn't have flown all the way here. And then they're like, oh, we thought you were coming here to see friends. We didn't know you were coming here for us, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, yeah, we came all the way just to get your stupid ass car so we can get home. And it was awful, a terrible experience. And so, that Thursday delivery turned into a Friday delivery, which turned into a Saturday delivery, which then they're closed Sunday, turned into a Monday delivery. And it was just lie after lie after lie after delay after delay. And it was so infuriating. Dealing with these people at Leith VinFast. I mean, truly deceptive, everything. The people we spoke to were trying to be as honest as possible. It was like the bosses trying to protect VinFast's image. I don't know. Anyway.
Right. They basically didn't want maybe Out of Spec to have the car.
No, because I don't think that was it. Because they weren't just doing it to us. They wanted us out of there. Because everyone in the showroom, I'm sitting in the showroom for days. And they're like, oh, what do you think about this? I'm like, it's a terrible car. Why would you buy it? So they wanted us the heck out of there. And I said, I'm only leaving until you sell us a car. So, yeah, finally, at like the last moment, they agreed to sell us this thing. But it was cool because I didn't want them like prepping a car or doing anything. So I switched the car at the last second. It came off the truck, you know, just a couple hours before we took delivery. I said, oh, we don't want Ready anymore. We'll take that green one. And that's the one we're having. So we have a real customer. I didn't want any funny, not that I think they would do that. I think, you know, at least Leith, the dealer group, it's a great dealer group. It's just new VinFast store, new processes, really sure. Not sorted yet, but it's early days for them. They've only been doing it for a month, I think. Okay. And then they said, okay, but we still have this stop sale. We can't deliver you the car. I thought, but we're here. And so I said to them, to the management, I basically said, you can get a video that we're going to film right now that says VinFast will not sell us a car. And that will make a great story. I'm happy with that. And we'll move on because you're not selling us a car. Or you can sell us a car. And if it's garbage, that doesn't reflect on Leith, that reflects on VinFast. So they agreed. And they said, if you can drive it for 10 miles, the one we're taking delivery, just take it around the block 10 miles. If it doesn't break down or explode, their terminology, then you can take delivery. And I thought, this really is great confidence in your product. So I drove it so gently for the 10 miles. I wanted this thing. So I didn't cause anything. It didn't touch any software. And we drove it 25 miles, actually, because I went a couple exits up the highway, tried the lane centering. That worked well. Really good driver assistance, actually. It's done by ZF. Surprisingly nice. And it didn't break. They sold us the car. In an hour and a half, we were out of there and I had to fly home. Between that time period, the software completely locked up. The car wouldn't shut off. It wouldn't chart, wouldn't do anything within the first 30 miles on the odometer. I mean, it just really went completely blank. But this is not indicative of the experience Francie had on her road trip, which I thought was really interesting. She did a soft reset on the vehicle. You hold the power button. And honestly, as far as I've heard over the last few days, yeah, there have been bugs. There's been little weird things. Every time they charge it, they say the battery's overheating, which it's not.
Okay.
So I don't know. But as far as I can tell, the car actually was not great. It was buggy, but it made it back to Memphis without major issue. It charges acceptably well. Not good. I would never say good, but it's got it's not a Bolt. Way better than Bolt. Better than Niro. Better than Kona Electric. And it's, again, the advertised lease rate was $250 a month, zero down. I paid a lot more than that. Colorado, we got a color, all these things, whatever. I just needed the car for content. I don't even know if they overcharged us or not. I don't care. It's not like it was that expensive. But, then they made it. Francie made it back to Memphis. I haven't spoken to her. I've just been following her Twitter account.
Right. Yeah, I'm curious. So is she filming a video of this trip back?
Yeah, her and Jordan, because Jordan flew in to take the Model Y. So they did Model Y versus VinFast on the way back.
Okay, right on. I guess they're in Toronto as well. John Lamb shares that they've seen 5 on the road in the past few months. That's interesting. I haven't seen any here at all yet, of course. I'm in Tallahassee, Florida. It's not the EV mecca for sure. So this is going to be interesting to follow this experience, this ownership experience. And to see what they get right and what they get wrong, what happens, what goes wrong, what goes right. But on this trip also, you came across you went to Hertz to rent a vehicle at some point. I think maybe after you flew out of here, and you found a Hertz that is renting out the Silverado EV.
Yep.
And you rented a couple of them.
Yeah, well, they had a bunch of Silver. They had maybe 8 Silverado EVs.
Okay.
And apparently LAX has Silverado EVs and other places. So Hertz must have done a big order. We also heard of, 600 Silverado EVs being delivered to Caltrans. Didn't we report on that?
I didn't, but...
No, I think we did a couple shows ago.
2 weeks ago.
Oh, okay. It's been a while. Sorry. My short-term memory.
Yep. So, that was cool. So, yeah, I had a Silverado EV... A 3WT, which as far as I can guess is somewhere around 180 kilowatt hour usable pack. So it's the medium one, not the big boy. Because the big one's 213, 214 usable.
Right. There's three battery sizes in the Silverado. It's been a while. I don't remember.
No, 4. I think it's 1, 2, 3, and 4WT that you can choose in the work truck. So you can choose a single a double, a bigger double, or a real big boy Hummer EV size battery.
All right. So, I mean, you've been in the Silverado before, so I guess you're familiar with how it works. Any surprises or anything of note?
Yeah, I mean, you know, this was the base. This is a work truck spec, so it doesn't have heated seats. The seat doesn't even go up and down. Like, it is stripped.
Okay.
But it's such a nice riding, comfortable vehicle with, you know, adaptive cruise in a base truck is nice and huge range. I could not do a charging test. I had the thing to drive from San Francisco up to, you know, Sonoma County, because I went for the Honda Prologue thing, and I don't know. I hate riding in the little shuttles that sometimes automakers provide. And then you got to talk to someone about that's not a car enthusiast. I don't know how to do that. So I was like, I'll just rent a Silverado when I got off the plane. I'll drive myself up there. And it was great. I mean, truly, it was really fun. So I ripped it up there. I told the folks, like, don't plug it in. I just wanted it dead. So my plan was on the way to the airport to do a charging test. And I ran out of time. I could not drain the battery. It has so much range, even when I'm full throttle, neutral, brakes. It's a rental car. I was driving it like one. I mean, I had this thing full sideways around corners. It was awesome. I was the first one to rent it. I got it with like 80 miles on it or 50, 60 miles on it. And it was much fun. And it was great. Yeah. So, and then the charging, I charged it from 30 to 80% or something 30, like
okay.
that.
Okay.
That's all I could get it down to. And I almost missed my flight. So I at least have that curve. So when I rent it again, I can then, you know, again, it's nice to have multiple curves so we can overlay data to verify, but no oddities while charging. First time I've really charged a GM Ultium vehicle with no question that I was getting the right curve. It was consistent. It was smooth. Sweet. It was full send, and it was big power. It was never below 200 kilowatts.
So this is the experience we need. Come on, GM Ultium.
It was great.
So they can do it. They can do it.
Maybe they fixed it, you know. I have one. You guys know how I complain about Hummer EV charging, how I charge it like 10 times and never got a repeated charging event. I have one of the followers, I don't know, from here or from State of Charge, that emailed me, and he lives in Pennsylvania, not too far from me. And he's like, look, I have a Hummer EV, and I've got the latest software. The charging seems stable now. So he said, you want me to drive to New Jersey? And we could do some charge recording. So I'm going to do that at some point soon with a customer car. So hopefully, and I'll be able to compare it to what I had before, which was all over the place. So maybe GM's got that figured out, Kyle. Maybe they, you know, have Ultium charging now where it's not just derating, you know, going like bonkers and then dropping down to 4 kilowatts and going up to 120, then 80 and holding for a while. And every time I unplug,
that behavior always happened when we started low, though. Yeah. And so I started at 30%. So I don't think we can be confident that they got it sorted. What I can say is I didn't know they could ever provide a consistent charging experience. And we at least see a hint of that starting at 30%. Right. It was an amazing charging session. I got to tell you, this thing just went, I recorded it. And then a Hyundai Ioniq 5 plugged into the shared charger next to me.
Oh.
And then it was so funny. He charged up and left. He only got 10 kilowatt hours. And then my truck went right back up. So that was good.
Interesting. Great.
So this is work spec truck. Can anyone buy that? Or do you have to be a fleet customer? Like, what's the deal with this one?
Just like any other fleet GM product, you have to have a fleet account in order to buy one. So it is not the consumer one. But also, GM is not really letting reviewers drive them.
No, I was going to say, it's a vehicle we don't hear too much about.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. And I don't know why, because it seems pretty juicy. And even though it's not the 4WT, the biggest battery one, I think I'm going to rent one from Hertz for like a month or two. They said it was only, I mean, it's expensive, yes, compared to if you bought it or anything, but you can rent it from Hertz for about $1,000 for the month, which for unlimited miles, that's really not bad. So I was I'll just go and rent one for a month or two and do all the comparisons. You know, when we have Cybertruck up there, even the 3WT has a way bigger battery than Cybertruck. Hertz doesn't typically let you tow with their vehicles. So maybe I can reach out to their media department and see if they would be like, oh, for the videos, maybe they'll let it slide. I don't know. But I think it would be worth to have one. I don't know if they rent them in Colorado or not, but I can at least grab it in California, road trip it out, and then road trip it back to return it.
I mean, $1,000 and unlimited miles. That's, for what is one of the most interesting EVs of the year, I think, just gets, it needs more attention.
Absolutely. I really want to cover the car, and it's just a shame that GM doesn't want people to. GM's has no electric cars in their fleet right now. No Lyrics. You can't test a Lyric if you're a journalist. Mm-hmm. You can't test a Blazer. Yeah. You can't test a Silverado. They pulled the Hummers out.
Really?
So
really?
Yeah.
Oh, there's no Hummers in the media fleets now?
Not that I know of.
Wow. Okay. Wow.
Interesting.
We'll be getting on to the reason why, I'm sure, in a moment.
Well, let's talk about GM for a little bit then. They held their Q4 2023 earnings call this week. And on it, and it was a very good call, actually. And they had a really great result in the last quarter, and their stock, shot up. GM stock has been on this, I was going to say a curve, but it's not a curve. It's been like flat for 10 years, basically. It hasn't really changed. But in the last little bit with a big stock buyback and then this great report, it's gone up a little bit. It's like $38 or something dollars. But anyway, on this call, Mary Barra said, "Our forward plans include bringing our plug-in hybrid technology to select vehicles in North America. Let me be clear, GM remains committed to eliminating tailpipe emissions from our light-duty vehicles by 2035, but in the interim, deploying plug-in technology in strategic segments will deliver some of the environmental benefits of EVs as the nation continues to build its charging infrastructure." And later she said, though, in a response to a question about how many plug-in hybrid electric vehicles it planned to bring to the market, that she said, we are going to bring those in at a time where we need them from a compliance perspective, which I don't really understand that so much, and that she would share more details later on plug-in hybrid capacity, and that they have the technology and they know the targeted segments that they're going to apply it to, but it's still not super clear what the strategy is here regarding plug-in hybrids. I'm thinking, she says it's coming, but the focus and R&D spending right now is pretty much all on EVs right now. The spending is all on right. R&D spending is all EV. The focus is on EV, but plug-in hybrids are coming. I don't know. I've got thoughts about this, but I want to hear yours. Kyle, I'm not sure how long you can stay with this, so I'll maybe hit you first real quick. What do you think about this?
Well, it's kind of interesting because we just bought for my dad's channel a Volt and an ELR.
Right.
So we're in the GM plug-in life now, and right. Here's the thing. I think what makes sense to me is with current technology, battery electrics for standard around town, SUV, sedans, whatever. But for the truck stuff. Electric, even with that Silverado big battery, that's not solving the answer. If you really are using a truck, what I'd really like to see, what I've been really asking for a long time, is an upsized Volt drivetrain dropped into a Silverado. Something that is primarily electric with a combustion extender. Now the Ram Charger, they're doing that. That's great. Right. That's what I'm. Mm-hmm. That's the kind of stuff that I like. So. I don't know. I think I'm not a great reviewer of companies and their strategies and their future, whatever they're seeing as trends in their future. But I will say, I can imagine they're basing a lot of their numbers off of their sales because it's GM. But they also don't have a very compelling, competitive battery electric vehicle on the market now. Bolt has stopped.
Right.
And so they have nothing that is competitive in any category. And I wonder if that's where they're starting to feel this pressure to build some plug-in hybrids, whether or not it's because of customer demand or they can't engineer a better car. I don't know. Oh, yeah. Ram Charger. I don't know if I said something different, but yeah, that's the one that's going to be the plug-in.
Yeah, I think you said Ram Charger.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't know. Tom, I know you got thoughts on this.
Yeah, it's interesting. I'm not a plug-in hybrid hater. I know it doesn't work for me. I don't need it. But I know, and I've talked to so many people through the years, there's a lot of people that just aren't ready or willing to go EV, full EV. Mm-hmm. And in order to get past that, the manufacturers have to do a better job of explaining the benefits of EVs, and dealerships have to do a better job of explaining the value proposition of electric vehicles. Because EVs and dealerships now, when somebody walks in and they look at this car and they're like, oh, I could buy this car for $30,000, or I could buy the electric version of it for $42,000. It's if the dealership can't properly explain why you actually might be ahead financially if you get the full electric version, and also talk about the other benefits of the electric version, the sales are going to be diminished because of that. And we're seeing that now 100%. I can't tell you how many people I talk to that say, you know, Tom, because of you, I was really ready to get an electric vehicle. But when I went to the dealership, when it came down to it, and the salesman was telling me, well, you could have this car for this, you could have this car for this, he couldn't push me over the edge for the EV. And, you know, salespeople don't care. They just want you to buy a car. They'll sell you a car with any type of propulsion system, but it's much easier for them to sell you the car with the combustion system because people understand it. You don't have to work hard. You don't have to explain the value proposition. You don't have to, you know, talk about, you know, fueling cost and maintenance cost and you know, just the time savings of not having to go to gas. You just go home at night, you plug it in. So they're at a competitive disadvantage at the dealership like that. And if the dealers don't do a better job, the sales are going to slow down. So I think for a lot of people, the plug-in hybrid is a much easier decision because they can say, well, I want to try this electric thing, but hey, I've got a fallback here. And, you know, if I can't charge it, or if I'm on a long road trip, I have this backup system. So I'm not against, there's going to be a period over the next 5-6 years. I would say 7 years from now, there will be absolutely no need to sell plug-in hybrids, other than, as Kyle said, some commercial truck use where people really need to haul, tow very long distances, a very heavy weight. But for me, it's hard for me to see a manufacturer now say, okay, we're going into it now, because you know what the life cycle is of vehicles, how long it takes to get them to market. And then to me, it almost seems like they should have had this strategy 4 or 5 years ago. And then towards the end of this decade, they would be phasing them out. You don't see the Chinese brands saying and doing this. And we've talked about this before, how the American car companies and even German car companies and Japanese car companies to some extent, or to full extent, if they don't get competitive in this electric vehicle space, they're going to get crushed in 6, 7, 8 years from now. And we talk about Chinese car companies. They don't come here now because there's tariffs and everything. They're going to work their way around that. They're going to be building factories in Mexico. They're going to be coming across the border. You know, if BYD, Li Motors, NIO, XPeng, a whole bunch of the other ones, they're going to be flooding this market in 6, 7 years with low cost, long range, fast charging, high quality electric vehicles. And if GM and Ford are still pimping their plug-in hybrids at that point, they're dead. And I don't see how they don't understand this. So while I'm not against them bringing plug-in hybrids, like introducing more to the lineup, I hope they understand it's a stopgap. It's only for the next 5, 6, 7 years, and they continue to do R&D on their full BEVs to be competitive in 4, 5, 6 years when it really is going to matter. Now, we brought up here a picture of the Volt EV, and Out of Spec Dave bought one of these used lately. GM had a great plug-in hybrid in the Volt. The tech in that vehicle is amazing. I did a lot of deep dives with their engineers, Josh Tavel, and people that worked on these vehicles for GM. I mean, they actually, I'm sure Toyota took this thing apart and said, they just actually built a better hybrid than we did. How the hell did they do this? When GM came out with that, and it was better than Prius technology at the time, but Prius had the name, the hybrid name, and I think that's why they really outsold, say, the Volt at the time. But the Volt, when it came out back in 2012, it was like a revolutionary plug-in hybrid. And you know, so I'm not against it. I hope they start making some good plug-in hybrids. I hope the minimum driving range is 60 or 70 miles. If it's under 60 miles these days, it's almost not worth it to pour all that money into it, because you should be able to drive on pure electric on most days of the year. And if the average American drives, say, 40 miles a day, you know, that's your average day. That means a lot of days you're driving 60, 70 miles. Some days you're driving 30, 40 miles. I'd like to see them have 60, 70 miles minimum driving range, introduce some decent plug-in hybrids, you know, put the Voltec technology in Equinox, which I was screaming for that in 2012. They could have killed if they did it back then. But, you know, one of the problems I have with this, and Ford saying, okay, you know, our electric vehicles aren't selling as well. We're gonna go back to plug-in hybrids. First of all, GM, how can they say they're, and I don't know if they've said this, I know Ford has said this, how can they be disappointed in their electric vehicle sales? They're not making them. They have some compelling vehicles, Silverado EV, Blazer EV, Equinox EV. They can't get them out of the factories. So maybe it's what Kyle was talking about. Maybe it's a matter of fact that they just don't have confidence that they can build them correctly and make them work. So I hope that's not the case. Ford, it's a little bit more difficult to figure out. You know, they complained about their sales. They set a record on the most BEVs they sold. Every year, Ford's selling more electric vehicles. The Lightning, yeah, it didn't crush it last year. It sold about 25,000 of them. It was the 8th best-selling electric vehicle in North America. So it's not like the sales were horrible. Maybe they just overestimated how quickly the ramp-up would be. If you look at the annual sales of electric vehicles in North America, and I think we have a chart for that, it's not like EV sales are flat. They're going up every year.
Yeah, and they're just not going up quite as much as it seemed like or something.
Well, as it seemed like. Let's bring this chart up here. That's plug-in vehicle sales from 2010 to last year. Okay, right. Are EV sales flat now? Are we experiencing some kind of leveling off or plateauing where they say, well, they're not selling as well? No, look at that. If I was a statistician, I would look at this and say, geez, you know, it looks like they're just starting to take off now. It started in 2021, and there's no real sign that that sales are waning. Now, on this chart, the dark green is pure BEVs. The light green is plug-in hybrid sales. So you could see plug-in hybrids are selling more also, but they don't sell near. Their sales are about a quarter of what purely electric vehicles are. So when you look at this, you say, how come everyone's talking about EV sales are down? If you read any kind of news articles these days.
It's like, it has to say that.
It looks like, oh, disappointing electric vehicle sales. Look at this chart. How can you say we have disappointing EV sales? Did they expect it to just go through the roof in 1 year? That's not going to happen. It's always a gradual climb up. If I were to look at this as an industry analyst, I'd say, holy crap, like EV sales are exploding. You know, only we sold double what we sold 2 years ago last year. So, you know, it's all frustrating when I hear and read these articles that, oh, all the auto manufacturers, their EVs aren't selling. All the manufacturers are going to go back to plug-in hybrids because nobody wants the EVs. That's ridiculous. You know, look at, maybe these manufacturers just thought it was going to ramp up faster than it was. They've always been wrong historically. It's amazing how auto manufacturers, this is their business, and they have hundreds of people studying market trends and doing research and polls and everything. Yet they always seem to get predictions wrong both ways, and for gas vehicles too. I mean, manufacturers are always tweaking their output for their combustion vehicles. But you don't read about it in the news. You don't read that, their forecast are cutting back 10% of regular Blazer production. Nobody really cares about it because the industry does that all the time. But it's frustrating to me to see so much negativity with electric vehicles now in the news when sales are taking off. So, you know, throwing some plug-in hybrids in there, that's a good EV with training wheels for a lot of people that aren't ready for full BEVs, but full BEV sales are going to continue to climb year over year. We're at that point now where, and I talk about the hockey stick adoption curve, and if you looked at that chart, it's kind of flat for a while, it goes up a little bit, and then it starts to curve like a hockey stick. We're in that now, and year over year, we're going to see more and more electric vehicle sales, and if GM and Ford and Stellantis here in the U.S., don't want to sell pure electric vehicles, NIO, XPeng, Li Motors, BYD, they'll be more than happy to take your customers.
Chang'an. Martin, they sold the Volt in the UK, right?
Yeah, the Ampera.
That's true. You even had the better name over there. In my opinion, he had the better name over there. Ampera. That looks great. So what do you think about this? Do you think, the market over there might be a little different. Do you have a lot of plug-in hybrids over there compared to here?
There are plug-in hybrids on the market here in the UK, because the UK, unlike mainland Europe, is quite different in that our EVs have been incentivized through business use. So if you have a company car and you're allowed to drive it because of your workplace, you get taxed because it's called benefit in kind. And so if you get a company car and you're allowed to use it to go get a pint of milk at the weekend, you know, it's a work van, but you can go do whatever with it, or even just a car that you have personal use of. Then we have a benefit in kind. It's like having any benefit from work. Then you need to get taxed on that. We are quite a high taxation over here. So the government killed that. It was 0%. It's 1%, 2%. It's increasing through this decade. But it doesn't. If you're going to have a company car, are you heading off? All right.
Bye,
take
Kyle.
Care.
Thank
All right.
You.
See you later.
Okay. Thank you. See you guys. Bye.
All right, see you, mate.
All right.
It only makes sense to have an EV. So it's a lot of businesses had. Incentivized to give their workers EVs and plug-in hybrids, and there was no incentive to charge them. So a lot of people have plug-in hybrids and never plug them in. So there was that issue as well. Anyway, let's unpick this a little bit. As I said in the intro, it was a very good earnings report for General Motors.
Mm-hmm. It was.
And so on the back of, hey guys, we're doing really well, it was surprising to then get that plug-in hybrid news. As Tom says, it follows off the back of negativity from Ford, who have just been talking up plug-in hybrids a little more recently. And so what we didn't get on that earnings call were any specifics. There was no plan. And that, I think, was perhaps the frustration that some people felt, was we're going to be rolling out plug-in hybrids when we need to, as and when. And rather than, oh, we have a system that we can put into our existing combustion cars. Because if you know half a thing about making cars, and maybe the people on that earnings call that were quizzing, you know, the analysts, I like those, the analysts that ask the questions. You think that if that's their job, paid very well to understand the automotive industry, then they would know that you can't just throw a hybrid powertrain into a combustion car. You can create platforms that can have either a combustion, a hybrid, a plug-in hybrid, or a pure EV inside, and you create that from scratch. The Koreans have done that very well with the Konas and the Niros, and so look, it's all very doable. But I didn't hear any detail like that of what are the vehicles you're going to do this with, and what's the time for, is it this year? Have you been working on this in the background for 3 years, and here's our new plug-in hybrid range?
Right.
And so that lack of detail concerns me, because the car industry is, as everyone knows, is a very, very long play. And so CFOs, boardrooms, product roadmaps are very comfortable talking 15 or 20 years in the future. That's just the nature mm-hmm. of the car business. And so it was odd to suddenly have this out of the blue, because it's, again, I'm slightly more detached from where I am. I'm at a distance to the US. It seems a little kind of out of nowhere, and a little hard to believe that they're going to be able to do it well, to be honest with
right.
you, because they've not done EVs very well. And so, why would we expect anything different? Because they can do the combustion business really well. So there's that side of it. And then there's the other side of it as well, which is US companies take up a disproportionate amount of the negative headlines that I'm sure our viewers and listeners have seen out there. Now, in the US last year, over 1 million EVs were sold. Globally this year, there'll be 16 or 17 million EVs sold. So with all respect, and I mean this with complete respect, because it's hard sometimes for my great American friends to hear it, the USA is not a big deal in the world of EVs. And it seems like it should be, because you've got Tesla and you've got the Detroit automakers. But when it comes to electric vehicles, as Tom hinted to, if the US decides we're not going EV, it's less, you know, it's about 11%, but going forward, it could be under 10% again now of the EV, of the global EV sales. And so what's interesting is it's not actually a big deal for GM or Ford to back away for a decade, because globally it won't matter. China will go EV and is going EV, and China is bringing forward its EV predictions. It was going to be 25% or 35% by 2030, and now it's going to be 50%. Like, it's China is racing ahead of even their own ambitious targets, and the same here in Europe. The EU are pushing forward with, you know, Norway is pushing forward first with banning combustion, and then, you know, we're 2030. The UK had a slight change in the headline thing, but they didn't change the underlying law, the mandate. So it got good headlines for the Prime Minister, but it didn't actually change anything, really. So we'll be about 2030. The rest of mainland will be about 2035. And so what the car makers know is that hasn't changed. And so they have they will carry on making compelling electric vehicles for the markets that want to buy them. And if the US isn't one of them, that's okay, because it's still a big market, obviously. And but it's just, it's not a deal breaker. The US delaying the move to EV is far more of a headline than reality. And that's the thing I'd like to remind everybody of, is that you're going to see, again, through this year, a lot more of these headlines about the growth is slowing. Yeah, but the growth has been 200-300% compounding. And though maybe it'll be 150% growth. So they're taking those figures, and there's a lot of vested interests. And it's going to be an interesting year for those negative headlines. And I think GM didn't mean to play into it, but obviously they did play into that, because all the headlines were, GM are giving up on EVs, and that's not what they said. It's not what they said, but
right.
that was the interpretation. It's not a huge deal, although I found it a very frustrating decision for them to make. Personally, because I'm such a huge fan of pure EVs,
it took me by surprise. So I kind of like plug-in hybrids. I was a moderator at a forum. We had a huge Honda Clarity plug-in hybrid community there, and they have great experiences. But so this whole thing, though, I kind of agree with Tom. I think it was a big mistake for GM to develop the Voltec powertrain originally and come up with the Chevy Volt, which is for its time, especially, was great technology, but then it didn't continue to improve it really and make it an option in other vehicles, like SUVs or pickup trucks or anything. It's just the ELR. They stuck it in the ELR, and they put a $70,000 price tag on it, and it ended up with a gorgeous looking Cadillac that was underpowered. I think it's, I don't know. I think it should have been more developed, and they should have kept developing it and improving on it. But since it stopped selling the only plug-in hybrid model that it had in 19, it doesn't make sense to me to bring it back now, 5 years later. So I'm not sure exactly how much engineering work they have to do. I mean, that's the thing. So let me just share this one thing here with you on the screen. So this is the Wuling. What's it called? The Starlight, I believe. The Wuling Starlight. And it is an electric car in China, but it's made. So yeah, it's electric Starlight. It's launching December 6th, just this past. Cheap too, $13,200 USD. SGMC is a Sino-American joint venture between GM, SAIC, and Wuling, and this car also is available as a plug-in hybrid, which is why I'm sharing it here. It seems like they do still have the technology or a modern kind of version of it, at least. I'm not sure, how that translates to what they're doing now, because it doesn't sound like they're putting a whole lot of spend, into R&D on plug-in hybrids, but they are going to put it in, I don't know. It just seems to me like just don't think there's a timeline for it, really, because with EVs really coming on strong, like if you have how do I put it here? The only way to take advantage of a plug-in hybrid electric vehicle is to plug it in every day. But if you can plug in a plug-in hybrid electric vehicle every day, you can also plug in an EV. And so I'm not sure why you need that the handholding. Maybe in some cases, sure, it'll, you know, some people really want to plug in hybrid more than they want an EV. And I understand that if they travel a lot and they have a, in an area where there's not a great infrastructure, but I'm losing my.
May I also say, remember that the dealers are enormously, they are disproportionately sure. powerful in the United States than compared mm-hmm. to anywhere else in the world. And they've now written two letters, one last year, mm-hmm. one this year, to the Biden administration saying, we don't want to sell electric vehicles. And if they are now sticking their head above the parapet and signing their name at the bottom of that letter, thousands of them do it, in two letters now to the White House to say, we do not want to sell EVs. We want to sell hybrids and soft hybrids and plug-in hybrids. Can you imagine the conversations over the last 2 years between them and the OEMs? They will not have been pleasant conversations. And ultimately, if all of your dealers, because of the situation that you've got yourself to in the United States with a very, very powerful dealer association, if they're saying, we don't want to sell these cars. You know, we heard from Kyle at the beginning of the podcast. They did not know how to sell an EV. Then the OEMs will be careful what I say. I was about to say buckle, and it just sounds like it's a giant fight. And I don't want to make anything a fight because there's too many fights on the internet. But you know what I mean? Like, they have to listen. The dealers are hugely important to the OEMs, and if they're saying we do not want to sell them, at some point you go, well, we want to sell cars. We want to build cars and sell them to you, and you sell them to customers. You have to get real at some point. So a very right. very powerful lobby there has happened now twice with them saying. It's not that we'll never go EV, but our customers, like the point the dealers were making in those letters were, our customers are not asking for them. They're more expensive than the other vehicles. We just don't want to sell them yet. Right. It was a reasonable thing for them to say. If I owned a dealer group of, you know, 20 dealers in a state somewhere, I'd probably sign my name to that because I want to get paid at the end of the month.
That's the thing. They just want to sell cars. And
just want to sell.
You guys know that I did a lot of dealership training. I worked in a lot of areas. And the interesting thing is, I'd go into an area, like let's say up to Massachusetts, to train six Chevrolet dealerships. And five of them would be complaining about EVs and saying, we can't get rid of these things. And then there'd be one that would take all their inventory, like would say, you know, oh, you don't want those bolts? Send them over here. I'll ship you over some gas cars. You know, they trade vehicles, you know. Mm-hmm. And because that dealership took it seriously and trained the staff. And when people came in, they had, a loaner bolt for somebody to drive when they were bringing their, you know, their gas car in for service. You know, that's if the manufacturers really want the dealerships to sell these cars, one of the best tools that they can do is subsidize loaner electric vehicles at the dealerships. See, the dealers have a certain loaner fleet. Some dealers don't even have loaners anymore. They just send you to they have an arrangement with a rental car agency nearby. But if the manufacturers subsidized the loaners, let's say, you know, a Chevrolet dealership gets three Equinox and they put EVs and put them into service loaners that are just for service vehicle loaners. And then GM says, you know what? We'll incur half your costs on those service loaners. But we want to see them on the road. They can't just be parked on your thing. We want to see, you know, at least one or two rentals a week for each one of them. So you kind of have to push them on customers. You know, when somebody comes in, you know, hey, I've got an Equinox, you know, an electric Equinox for you to buy. Ah, I don't want that electric car. It's the only thing we have. Mm. All right, give it to me. You know, and right. getting people in them to use them is a powerful sales tool. It demystifies this, you know, right. and
but they also have to educate them too. They can't just yeah. like throw them in a car. They need to, you know, help them out with figuring out how to deal with it, how to live with it properly.
Yeah. So people are complaining that I'm low. Let me see if I could put my mic up higher and over here. How's that sound? A little bit better. I think I'm a little closer to it now. So
maybe tap on that mic for a second. Is that the one?
Is it not being used? It sounds like it's on that mic.
Okay.
I'm
pretty sure that's what's being used. Yeah. Good. So I'll just talk a little bit closer. But I think that's a big part of it is getting people until the dealerships get on board with this. And the only way to get dealerships on board with it is money. The only thing they care about is a financial incentive. The OEMs have to share the pain with the dealerships because they're shipping them the cars now. They're not helping them sell them. A lot of the dealerships aren't asking for help. It almost has to be force fed on them, I think, at this point. And, you know, otherwise they're going to lag. And this is an existential threat for Ford and GM. I wholeheartedly believe that. I know a lot of people, it seems, you know, impossible for people. We've lived our whole lives, GM and Ford, you know, we're you know, these monstrosities back. Mm-hmm. If you're my age or even older, you know, if GM and Ford, if it was good for GM, it was good for America. You know, people used to say, and they,
and also Bill. Oh,
yeah. Sorry. I mean, they were just, you know, cornerstones of American economy was GM and Ford. But we're at this period now where the next 6 or 7 or 8 years is pivotal. If they get this wrong, they're going to be, you know, Nokia, they're going to be BlackBerry. They're, you know, it's going to happen. And I hope it doesn't happen. But
yeah. And, you know, one of the things that to build on your point, Tom, is the consumer confidence. And that's one of the things that I think Jim Farley does incredibly well. And you and I have spoken about when they first talked about, and we'll talk about this in a moment, but the Ford NACS Tesla adapter connector, when he first went on CNBC or whatever it was, and he went, yeah, we'll ship them free to customers. And whether that was a slip of the tongue or whether it was intentional, we don't know. I know that some people within Ford pulled away a little bit of, we're like, well, let's confirm that. And then this week he did say, no, we'll send them all free. That gives huge consumer confidence on the second biggest purchase that all of us will make in our lives behind, if we are homeowners and home purchasers, than behind the house. The car is nearly always second. And it was my frustration this week with GM, which was, oh, no, EVs? No, you mean plug-in hybrids, my friends. That's the future. And that was the frustration, which was the confusion, because those headlines are picked up on all of the financial channels. They drip down through them, and they get into the mainstream as well. And people, if they're not super into EVs, they'll just scan the headlines in their feed. And along with all of the other stuff, they'll see, well, you know, General Motors backing away from electric vehicles, which was genuinely the headlines I saw this week, even mm-hmm. though it's not true, then you're going to not want to buy. Why would you invest your own personal hard-earned money in that when you think, well, I mean, EV's going to be around in 10 years? I think Ford do it very well, but we are also living in an era where, for the time being in the US, round the boardroom table, the CFO, the chief financial officer, is currently pulling the strings. Now, there was a period of time where Tesla caught everyone with their pants down, and the CTO and the product managers and the head of electric vehicle programs at all these car companies mm-hmm. got a very big voice in the room because they were all mm-hmm. worried about what was happening. And for some reason, the last year or so, I think it's going to continue this year, the realization kicking in of how massively capital intensive it is to do these projects, the wobbles that have happened around the boardroom table, the bean counters have got an outsized voice at the moment. And that balance of power has shifted, and the big car makers in the US, not everywhere, are publicly having a wobble. And so when Jim Farley comes out and says, no, we'll ship them all for free, that's exactly what they all need to be doing. That's what GM, that's what Mary Barra did for the last 3 years until this week. Right. Although she couldn't deliver on her promises, which that's a whole separate podcast. They said we're going to be here with EVs. They never, ever came with them, and they never delivered because they couldn't get them right. And we still want them to do that, and we still think they can do that. So it's that confusion as well, which the last thing, add on top of all the dealer stuff as well. You walk into your dealership, they're not fully on board. You've seen the CEO saying, oh, no, plug-in hybrids. What are many people going to expect?
Right. So right now there are a number of plug-in hybrid electric vehicles on the market right now. So people can go out and buy like a plug-in hybrid Kia, I believe, and also like a BMW. These few different brands have them there. They can get them. The thing I'm thinking about with GM, I just don't know if there's that big of a time frame to make any money off of it. You know what I mean? And so I just don't. Not that I don't think that there should be no plug-in hybrids. I think for some people, you know, it's fine technology. I'm not opposed to plug-in hybrids on any sort of philosophical level at this juncture in history. I just think their time is kind of limited, and I don't know that GM can make a whole lot of money on them in that you know, 5 or 7 years, I think, when, because I don't think they'll make any sense in 5 or 5 years or so when we'll have a lot more infrastructure. I expect charging better battery technology to be improved from where we are today quite significantly, actually. And I just don't think there's going to be the market. So I'm not sure that's the, you know, jumping into that is like the, and to be clear, like, and to hear your point, Martin, there's a lot of headlines out there about GM doing an about face and things. But if you listen to actually Mary on the call and Mary speaking, she's quite clear that, you know, the focus is on EV. But, and this is, I don't know, she used the word compliance or something in her statement, you know, not compliance, some sort of, I mentioned it earlier. But anyway, it doesn't seem like she's like really, you know, married to the idea or really, you know, going to push them hard. But I guess if they have the technology, they can put it in some vehicles and make an extra option. They are getting a lot of pressure from dealers to bring back hybrids. And, you know, they don't, GM doesn't sell any hybrids right now, like normal hybrids. Like, personally, I think every vehicle they have should be, you know, electrified to some extent, like even like a basic hybrid version. But they don't have that, which, you know, shame on them. They should have done that. That's what Toyota's doing, and their Toyota's hybrid sales are doing very well right now. But anyway, there's a big bit of news. I thought we should talk about it somewhat, and I'm not sure if we've beat the horse completely to death, but it does seem to be in a lot of agony. I don't know. So let's talk about something else for a second. Last year, Ford surprised everybody by announcing it was adopting the Tesla Charge Connector and gaining access to the Supercharger network. Then yesterday, CEO Jim Farley, or was it the day before, CEO Jim Farley put out a couple posts on social media saying that the 21 to 24 model year Mustang Mach-E and Ford F-150 Lightning owners will be eligible to receive a free NACS to CCS adapter, and that the reservation process will be validated by VIN, with one charger available per VIN or per vehicle, and cost of shipping is included, and details on how to reserve one along with the tech specs of the adapter will be shared soon. So activating, charging, and payment once a customer has an adapter, they say, will be seamless through Ford Pass or in-vehicle public charging app. So a press release was put up with that info, but it also had this little extra tidbit at the end that this is Ford owners won't have access to the entire supercharger network, which we've kind of known, but this is what the thing is. So the press release makes it clear that this is only for version 3 and up stations. So that means the version 2 superchargers, which peak at 150 kilowatts, as opposed to 250 kilowatts for the version 3s and version 4s. Version 4 should increase to more than that even eventually. Those 150 kilowatts, the OG superchargers, will not be accessible for Fords. But, you know, all the other ones will. And that number is big and growing. Even since they made the original announcement, we're up to 17,250 pedestals, Tesla superchargers, that Ford will be able to charge up. And that number is growing as, you know, Tesla is very aggressive with its supercharger build. So, Tom, you're very familiar with adapters generally. What can you tell us about this one?
So the interesting thing is when Farley first came out and said that, I immediately contacted Ford and I was like, you're going to give away a free adapter to 60,000 Mach-E and Lightning owners? That's like, you know, $10 million worth of adapters at, plus shipping, you know? And they were kind of like, no. We'll get clarity on this. That's not going to be the case. I think Jim was excited about the announcement, and he was saying that, you know, our customers will have access to the adapters, and, you know, we're not going to be shipping these things out. And, I even spoke about it here on State of Charge. I think I even wrote about it on Inside EVs. And, that was made clear to me by Ford representatives that, no, we will not be giving these things away. But now we turn out, I guess Jim doubled down on it and said, you know what? I think we should be doing this and we're going to do it. And he said it. So now you can't undo that. He could have almost walked it back on CNBC because he kind of said it quickly. He didn't tweet it like he did now. So, I mean, that's like, I think they've sold over 60,000 Lightning and Mach-Es at this point. So, you know, that's, that's a lot of adapters. And speaking of which, so you guys might remember about 3-4 months ago, I did a video with the A to Z adapter. I had a prototype of it, and I brought the CEO on in State of Charge, and we did an interview. I just interviewed him again this week because now they have the final production version of the adapter is out and for sale. And they made a lot of improvement over the prototype that I had 3 months ago. So I brought on the CEO, Amin Zator, as well as one of his engineers and consultants on the adapter, and one of the people that worked on taking the original prototype, making it better. They also worked with some of the OEMs. They sent all the OEMs the adapters and said, look, tell us what you don't like about this and we'll improve it, because obviously we would like if you endorse it. You know, we probably won't get that, but at least tell us what you would like to see changed. They took all that in, they re-engineered it, and now they have a final product. That interview is going to go up on State of Charge this afternoon. It's about a half an hour long. I think we learned a lot about the new adapter. Cool. And as I say in the video, I'm not here to pimp or sell these adapters. You know, it's if you want one, if you're interested in getting an adapter, take a look at the video. You make your own decision. I'm certainly not discouraging you from buying one. I feel pretty comfortable with this adapter now that I've really talked to their engineer, seen the improvements they've made on it. I've actually seen some pictures, which I couldn't share, of the facility in China that makes it, the testing protocol that went into it. And, you know, I think they made a lot of serious upgrades, and I'm going to be using this one on my cars and testing the heck out of it. I'm going to pretty much get all the adapters, and I'll be getting one from Ford and Rivian. I own a Rivian and a Ford. Both companies said they're going to give them away.
Nice.
I don't think that's going to be protocol for all the companies. I do not see companies giving these away. I think it's just kind of like Ford and maybe Rivian almost feel bad, like we've been selling you these EVs the last 2 years and now we're switching the connector. But like moving on from now on, it's public knowledge the EVs are going to be changing to the NACS, so that's kind of on you, you know. So I think you're going to be buying these adapters. I mean, heck, look at how many car companies don't even give you a level one charger with the car anymore. So they're not going to give you a $200 adapter. I don't believe so, at least. So, but I'll be testing all of them. And if you're interested in learning a little bit more about this guy here, check out State of Charge this afternoon. That video will be going up.
That's something that I've been thinking about, because Ford really kicked off the gold rush of announcements of everyone doing this. Do you think by Jim saying we're going to give the adapter away for free, do you think that causes some headaches this weekend around the boardroom table? Elsewhere,
of course it does. Everybody's taught. Everyone's like, oh, do we do this now? And you know,
because if not, you're a cheapskate, right? Because yeah, Ford will do right? it.
Yeah, it'd be a lot easier for GM to do it because that. Well, no, I was going to say because they haven't sold any EVs, but they would have to backtrack on Bolt, and they sold a lot of bolts. So yeah, and somebody asked me about the price. It's $197 right now. And,
this should just not. They shouldn't do that to the Tesla Supercharger network.
And here's the thing about it. So I even had some, like, the thing about this is, let's say all the Rivian and Ford customers are going to be shipping them. They're going to be getting them. Don't think you're going to get this like in a week, because between Rivian and Ford owners, there's probably 80,000 of these things, 70,000 or so of them that need to be sent out. There's no way they'll make them that fast. So I even think that some people that are, say, Ford customers are going to run out and buy one and then just get the other one free and figure, like, well, it's better to have two in case one breaks, or I can, you know, whatever. Because, if you remember when the CCS1 adapter came out for Tesla owners first, so they could use CCS1, Tesla was, like, perpetually out of stock on them. People were going, like, every day and checking, you were refreshing, and it was like they sold the first 5,000 they made, and then they got back ordered and they stopped selling them. So I think that's going to happen again. I think it's going to take like 6 months for Ford to actually ship them out to all their customers. I mean, I hope I'm wrong, but don't think if you have a Ford vehicle, you're going to get this in it, like, as soon as you put in your VIN and say, I want one. I think it's going to take a long time, because the company that's providing them to Ford, isn't going to just take their first 80,000 or 70,000 of them and just give them to Ford. They're going to want to be doing retail sales too, because they're going to get more money selling them to retail customers. So we assume that's Tesla. We assume that Ford has made the deal because Tesla's making their own adapter, and so are a bunch of other companies. So I haven't heard of anybody signing a deal yet with Ford or Rivian or who's to sell them. So I'm assuming they're all Tesla, but I do know that all of the companies are trying to get the OEMs to certify their adapter as like, okay, we'll give you this to our customers because it's safe and it's made well. But I'll stay on top of that. I'm also, Lectron is going to be making one also. They actually just started advertising it. I'm going to be interviewing their company also this week. And that interview is going to probably be up on State of Charge next week. So I'm going to really stay on top of this adapter stuff and try to figure out which ones are the best ones made, which ones are robust, so people, you know, don't buy a junk one.
And right. Tom, in the Ford Pass app, because I haven't got that, will it mean it's as seamless as a supercharger? As in, do you have all your billing in there? Will it just be a case of rock on up and plug in and walk away?
I think that's what it's supposed to be.
Yeah,
and, you know, towards the end of February, we understand that Tesla is going to be opening up, like saying, okay, on our end, we can accept these other vehicles that agreed to do this with us. But now I think we're going to be waiting for the companies, the Fords and the GMs, to get their back end done, their app ready, so that they can you know, use it. So I think what we're going to see is the end of this month, Tesla's going to be like, okay, you can use our superchargers, and the Ford and GM are going to be like, no, our customers can't use them yet. We're not ready. You know, because I think Ford is still targeting spring for, and that's what they said all along. I haven't heard anything differently. But we did hear from Tesla that the end of February, their end would be ready to go.
Right. We heard there was that meeting in California somewhere where a Tesla employee mentioned that, said something about to the effect that this would be happening in February, but that wasn't Ford's communication at all. So spring is, but expectations were kind of set back then a little bit, you know, because there was headlines everywhere, February, No, that's not happening. It looks like, it looks like it's going to be March or April sometime. It'll happen sometime.
Spring,
you know,
It's spring is what I reached out to Ford to try to confirm that, and they said nothing has changed on our end. Mm-hmm. We said spring in the beginning. We're sticking with spring. We'll let you know if that changes.
Okay.
Right. Happy Chris reminds us it will be crowded at the superchargers right now. I have seen lines where you had to wait 5 minutes for a stall to open. I am not liking that. I mean, we hear that is. Frustration.
And not not just over the holiday season as well. In many places it is. They're queuing already. And,
and wait till they take up two spaces.
Teslas are still like putting out the superchargers. They make them in, you know, they make them fast. They just install way more even now than the other two networks, maybe combined. So I think they'll eventually, I think they've got to catch up to the demand, right? But anyway, we're just about, we're up against our clock here. But I just wanted to mention that the Volvo EX30 that a lot of people are very excited about, it's been delayed a little bit, but I think it's only going to be Europe, and only by a couple of weeks, it looks like. So looking through the communications last night, it looks like we're still on for the mid-2024 in the US for the Volvo EX30. So don't worry if you see some headlines about delays. There is, looks like, a couple of weeks of delay in Europe. And of course they've also had the EX90s delayed since like last, it's supposed to be out by now, but now it's also delayed because of, and these are both software issues, which, you know, just underlines that software is difficult for everybody.
One more thing, Tom. I wanted to bring up about the adapter. We keep just talking about supercharger access. You have to remember all of the networks, Electrify America, EVgo, ChargePoint, they're all adding NACS connectors to their stations. So these adapters will work there also. So, you know, it's not just supercharger access. You'll also be able to, you know, I mean, you'd be able to plug in a CCS vehicle there also, but just so you know, these adapters are designed to work with the system anywhere, not just Tesla superchargers.
Which, if you are on a more seamless experience, as crazy as this might sound, if using the NACS connector is either quicker, and it saves me 5 seconds, or is more seamless, or the billing happens all in one place and is more convenient. It would be crazy that you turn up to a station that's got both a CCS and a NAX cable, and that you're getting your adapter out and not using the, you know, and using that, but it might be a better experience than, which is odd because I see our friend Brandon Flash, when he's in the right mood, trying to reply to people on Twitter when they go, oh, the Tesla protocol is just way better than CCS. And he knows more about charging than anyone. And he's like, Tesla is CCS. It's all built on the same thing. Tesla is CCS. Like, it's not, they're not two separate things. So when he's in a generous mood, he's nice to people and's like, you know, trying to educate the Tesla fanboys. But it'll be, but it does genuinely work better. So be interesting to see how people use those stations. I think, Tom, that's the point that doesn't get talked about very much. We all talk about the adapters. We don't ever talk about the fact that there's going to be new chargers in the ground with these cables natively.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's true. That's
a really good point.
You have a nice kid. Your kitty's coming to visit you in the background. I don't know if you know that, Martin. But
oh, hello. Yeah, it's one of two black cats that we have, two little rescue cats that we have that make my life hell about 6 a.m. when they want feeding.
Right. All right. Oh, just really quick. Speaking of adapters, really quick. Bjorn Nyland has a really cool video this week where he tried out the Hi-Fi Z, which is an electric sports car from China. It's like bonkers, kind of crazy. But he had to charge it with an adapter from the Chinese standard to fit CCS, the European CCS charger. That thing, it's got its own battery inside of it. It's just crazy. Tom, if you haven't seen it, you should go check that out. Yeah, but anyway, I think that brings us to the end of our show. If you have any comments or questions, please leave them below or get in touch with us on the social media platform of your choice. Don't forget, if you like the show, please give us a thumbs up, click subscribe, tap that bell icon for notifications, because we'll be coming up in midweeks. And thank you all very much for joining us, and we'll see you all again next time. Ciao.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.